I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com and the Big Change Program with Josh Lajani. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live a healthy and heartfelt life. So this is the second of a couple of crazy busy weeks for me, including two podcasts a week. So I'm going to keep the announcements real short and get to the tofu of the interview really quickly. First announcement is both self-serving and possibly you-serving. I have had the most amazing coaching conversations with some clients this past week, and I'm just really excited about the transformations that I'm seeing them make in their lives. And I would like to invite you, if you are struggling, if you believe in the plant-based world, the plant-based message, and you're trying to figure out why you're not implementing, why you can't get it into your own life in a more significant and consistent way, think about coaching. And think about coaching with me, because this podcast is supported by all the other work I do. And if you want to find out more about that, go to plantyourself.com/laser, L-A-S-E-R, because all the coaching I do is in short laser increments. We don't spend an hour at a time on the phone gazing into your navel and figuring out what your mother did to you when you were in utero and all that sort of thing. It's very actionable. It's outcome focused, and it could be a lot of fun. So again, plantyourself.com/laser if you would like to support yourself while you're supporting me and this show. All right, well, I'll be back at the end to remind you that you can also support the show on Patreon, become a patron and a sponsor of the show. But right now, let's get into today's episode. My guest, Ken Lander, I met at PlantStock this past summer, and he's an impressive guy. We quickly got to talking about his career as a trial attorney and applying his insights into how the plant-based movement is succeeding and failing at winning hearts and minds, and how you have to not just sway a jury, whoever that may be, with facts and arguments, but also with rhetoric and emotion. And so I wanted to get Ken on the podcast to talk about that. As it turns out, we didn't talk about that at all. We covered instead a much deeper conversation into Ken's motivation, into his faith, and really the basis of it is the transformation that he went through in a remarkably quick period of time. You'll see if you go to the show notes for today's episode, which is plantyourself.com/233, a couple of side-by-side before and after photos of Ken. The first one, he's 430 pounds on December 16th, 2016. And then 6 months later, he is down to 302 pounds. And the last time I asked him about it, it was 8 months, and he was down 138 pounds and is preparing to run his first 5K. The weight loss is the visual star of the story, but the health is the real star. When Ken disembarked from a plane on that December 16th, he lost his breath, stumbled, couldn't make the baggage claim. Went to the emergency room, and they discovered a very sick heart, a 90% blockage in the left descending artery, and severely compromised ejection fraction, which is how cardiologists talk about heart efficiency. I won't spoil it by telling you that Ken took action and got better, which he did, but we'll let Ken tell the story in his own very charming and powerful words. So without further ado, Ken Lander, welcome to the Plant Yourself podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So I met you a couple of weeks ago now up at Plantstock, and you had an amazing story of transformation, and it's one that you are still in the thick of. So why don't we start there? Can you just sort of tell us, the quick version of, let's say before you discovered the plant-based world, where had you gotten to, and how bad was it?
Well, I mean, I was, basically a poster child of Western illness. I mean, and didn't know it yet. I mean, I had been a trial lawyer in Atlanta for years, and then decided to move to Costa Rica and not be a lawyer anymore. And one thing that I never got around was eating and my weight. And I've been successful in, a great part of my life, my career, my business life was great. My ability to communicate with people was great. Everything was great, except, December 16th, 2016, I'm getting off an airplane. I weigh 430 pounds and left the airplane and found myself losing breath and not being able to get to baggage claim without stopping seven times in a little small airport in Central America. And I went to the emergency room, and there began the journey of my plant-based life. Because what happened was is that I got home after going to the emergency room and realizing that I had a very sick heart, and Googled on Amazon, through Amazon, checked for books on heart disease and diet. And there are 247, by the way, at least last time I checked. And one of those books was a Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. And Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. I thought that was a pretty cool title. Seemed to be appropriate. I bought it that morning at 5 in the morning. I read it between 6 and 10. It talked about plant-based health and how it could turn my health around. And that lunch that morning at 11 o'clock, I told my wife I was going to start eating plant-based diet. And that's how it all began. Later found out that that I had my left ascending artery was 90% blocked. I had to have stents. I had to go through that whole process. But during this whole time, I began to eat plant-based and very religiously, just like Dr. Esselstyn talks about in his book. I began to eat 9 to 10 cups of green leafy vegetables a day, in addition to my other foods that were all plant-based, no meats at all, no dairy, no oil, no sugar, very, very little salt. And as a result of that, long story short, I end up May 14th on a bed in a hospital in Clinica Biblica with my cardiologist, the same one that had received me in the hospital, checking my heart. And he grabs my arm. He says, "I can't believe it, Ken. You have a new heart. I just can't believe it."
And that was May 14th of this year, 2017.
This year. That's right. So less than 5 months. And my heart had shrunk by 50%, the abnormality. My ejection fraction had gone up by 86%, which means my heart was pumping 86% better than it was before. And I am now today, 9 months later, walking, running a 5K in less than 40 minutes. It's an amazing transformation.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
So you're right. And one of the first things that always interests me is you're not the first person to go to the ER after suffering an event like that and discovering a dire diagnosis. And
right.
Yet you're one of a very select few who wants to do something, who even Googles, let's say, who doesn't, because their doctor's going to tell you what to do, right? So let's start there. Did your doctors tell you what it was, what to do, and how it was going to be? And, and if so, did you listen? Obviously you wanted something else.
Well, no, they didn't. They basically told me my heart was enlarged. They told me to come back the next week. and have all these tests. And they were putting me in the 50-year-old fat man box, which is not unreasonable to put me in the 50-year-old fat man box because I was almost 50 years old and I was extremely overweight. And all the things that come from that. But, you know, I sat on the front porch that morning and, you know, said a little prayer and said, hey, you know, what do you want me to know? And basically what came to me was, you know, maybe you should work on your diet. Maybe you should really put that part of your life out there. And it really became a kind of a moment of hypocrisy. It's like, you know, how is it possible that I could believe that I could exist as a human being on this planet at 430 pounds and not have health issues as a result of the diet I was eating before? And so that was what led me to look for heart disease and diet and led me to this book. Now, the crazy thing is, this is crazy, is that that was on December 17th in the morning, at 5 in the morning. 2 days later, May 19th, I'm in a meeting.
You mean December? December 19th.
December, yeah. 2 days later, exactly, December 19th, I'm in a meeting with my project management team. I work with a coffee company called Thrive Farmers. And we were sitting there talking, having our normal Monday meeting. And I said, by the way, I've started a plant-based diet. And two of the people in that meeting said, oh, we did too, 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, wow, tell me about it. I want to know. Turns out that Dr. Esselstyn's son, Rip Esselstyn, gave them a copy of this book that I had read 48 hours earlier. And the only reason why is that Rip is good friends with the people that we're working with in T in Austin, Texas. What a confirmation. And at that point, that's when I knew that there was something to this diet and health thing. And I haven't gone back. I have to tell you, Howard, I literally since December 17th of 2016, I have not violated the diet, not once, not one time. Not one time.
So when you look back on your life, would you have predicted that about knowing yourself, that when you make a decision, you will stick with it 100%? Was that a surprise to you or was that just how you are?
No. I mean, I was that way with trial law. I was that way with my work. But I certainly wasn't that way with my own personal health. No, I wasn't. I mean, it is truly unexplainable, other than miraculous, that I actually had the forewith, was strong enough to actually take this on. Until I, you know, and the thing was, is that because it was, and really, what it boils down to was, is I was lying to myself. I mean, you know, and that's exactly what was going on. I mean, I was lying to myself that the way I was eating wasn't going to affect my life when I'm literally, you know, a 54 waist. And those pants were tight, by the way. I mean, you know, it's amazing the capacity we have as human beings to tell ourselves things that aren't true and believe them.
So how did you get to be eating the way you had been eating prior to your emergency room visit? I mean, I hear an accent. It doesn't sound Costa Rican. I'm imagining sort of South or American South or Midwest.
American South. So I come, I was talking to my best friend today. We have a call every week. And I was like, you know, I couldn't have come from a worse place of eating than anywhere else in the United States other than the American South. And I grew up in the worst place of it all because my mom grew up in Texas. And she didn't just grow up in Texas. She grew up in Southeast Texas, right down by the Mexican border. So I grew up with pretty much every bad type of food you could eat, every wonderful food that we all think about as comfort foods before we begin to live the plant-based lifestyle. I ate them. Fried chicken, you know. Here in Costa Rica, fried pork rinds, you name it, fried, everything was fried in And most of it was meat every single day. And so for me to make that transformational shift in, you know, it was definitely medically motivated. It was like, you know, I finally woke up and said, I can't keep lying to myself. Either I'm going to change or I'm not going to change. And that's where it got to be. That was the point. And so I grew up with on the worst types of food you possibly could grow up on. In excess, I was an only child who my mom put me on a pedestal and she rewarded me. I was a celebratory eater. So I loved to eat because I love to celebrate with people. And you came to my house, you know, you had the mac and cheese, and the mac and cheese was full of like 2.5 pounds of cheese. I mean, you know, the more cheese, the more love, the more, I mean, it was just on top of over the top eating. That's what I was doing.
So were you a heavy kid?
I was a heavy kid. Pretty much I only got to my fighting weight of like 190, 200 pounds around college time. And I was, the one thing that did save me is that throughout my life, regardless of my weight, I was an exerciser. I was someone who that tried to keep active and move and had lots of energy. So on the inside, I already had developed a lot of discipline around those kinds of things. And that's helped a lot in the last 9 months for sure.
So you're a celebratory eater. You grew up on all these extremely hyper palatable comfort foods. You're 430 pounds on December 16th. Had you tried anything before that? Had you tried any of the diets and things?
Oh yeah. I'm quite sure I've tried them all in some version. It may not be the book that was read, but you know, I had tried the Atkins diet. I had tried, you know, low calorie. I had tried, the closest thing I ever got to getting close to it was the idea of eating, eating for health, was trying a diet that focused on the root cause of health, which was, you know, cellular health. And so I had gone to a place where I was eating a lot less meats for a while and I was losing weight. And, you know, one thing I've learned through this process is that people like me, moderation does not work. I mean, moderation does not work. It's like you either eat meat or you don't eat meat. And I still have all of my friends saying, well, can't you eat just a little fish? You can't eat a little. What are you going to do when you get down to your fighting weight of 190 pounds? You're going to eat a little fish? And the answer is categorically, no, I am not going to. Because I have finally found out that is the one thing that I can't handle. And it's one thing that my biological structure cannot handle. And what I'm finding is that the large percentage of society, their biological structures cannot handle meat and dairy. And, you know, I feel better because I'm not full of inflammation all the time. I you know, this plant-based lifestyle has put me in a place where I'm not fighting something that I'm putting in my body every day. And so, I forgot one of the greats that said it, one of the founders, but I think I'm sure Dr. Esselstyn has said it too. The reason you begin, and I know Rip said it, the reason why this diet works so well is because every day you actually feel better. It's not just the weight. It's you actually feel better. You feel energized. You feel focused. You feel you don't feel achy all the time. Things are starting to work better. You're starting to get perceivably better health, and your body's telling you can do more because you're feeling more healthy.
Right. So did you have that feeling to some extent when you were doing the cellular health diet?
Yeah.
So what happened there? Why did you find that wasn't sustainable?
I think it's because ultimately a little of something became a lot of something again for me. And so the idea that there was an exception to the rule became the rule itself. And so, you know, Sunday, you know, I'm not going to eat greasy foods during the week, but on Sunday we have a big party and we cook a pig and we're doing all these things and we're having a big party and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't eat just a little bit of the pig. I eat a lot of it. And then after a while, 2 days of the week happen, and then 3 days of the week, and then as we all do as human beings, we lose our north, and as a result of that, we begin to eat badly again.
Yeah, I'm starting to really respect this idea that the only way moderation works for the vast majority of us is if it's imposed externally. So, you know, our paleo ancestors ate some meat, but they would have eaten as much meat as they could have gotten their hands on. They were just limited by their environments and their tools and their circumstances. And when we remove those limitations from ourselves, there's a very small percentage of people who can mimic the kind of moderation that we would have naturally been subject to, you know, in our ancestral environment.
And we, you know, we don't live in a moderate society. I mean, everybody wants to think they're moderate politically, you know, in their faith, whatever. Moderation seems to be glorified, right? But at the end of the day, everything we see on the television is not moderate in any way whatsoever. I mean, you know, you see a billboard and it has four patties of beef up under it, and you see all this cheese coming off of it, and you see pizzas with cheese on the inside, the outside around it, you know, get free cheese on the side. I mean, we don't live in a world that's moderate. We live in a world that says that if you, to be healthy, you need to look like a model that's walking down the runway in New York. And we're all different and we're all constructed in different ways. We're all, you know, those are all these different things going on, but we don't live around messaging that's moderate. That just doesn't happen. Even in exercise. I mean, you know, you see people, you think, you know, I'm doing my exercise, you know, 8.5 hours a week, and that's a lot. That's not moderate. That's a lot of exercise. But I still idealize my exercise as that guy running the ultimate marathon and winning it. That's real exercise, you know. So we have no real way to kind of to find a good kind of middle bead line for that kind of stuff at all.
So you had done all these different diets. Mm-hmm. Some of them had worked, and then because of the lack of moderation, they eroded back. What about like you remember what happened with Atkins? Were you losing weight on that too?
Yeah, I lost weight on Atkins too. I mean, I don't remember it very well. I think I was a bit younger then, you know, but then it just didn't make any sense to me. I mean, you know, after a while, it's like, you know, I'm eating all this bacon. This is actually healthy for me. I mean, you know, I grew up on a farm, so I grew up around, you know, animals and vegetables and all those kind of things. And, you know, I think we just intrinsically know that a nice, big, juicy beet is more healthy for you than a piece of bacon. I mean, it's just intuitive. I mean, but you know, for some reason, the messages have gotten, the wires have gotten crossed over time.
Yeah. So what I'm wondering about though is, you at 11 o'clock in the morning, you have this revelation. You announce to your wife that this is how you're going to eat from now on, but you have this history of failing on diets. Did this feel different to you? Like, this is the time it's going to succeed? Or was there a voice in your head saying, all right, here we go again?
Well, this was there's really two things going on here. One was that either I had to do something differently or I was going to die. That's probably the first realization that I got along those lines. And the second one was, is that, you know, if I make this decision, this is going to be the last chance I have to make this decision. It's not going to get better again. I finally looked back and realized this is not going to get better again. And if, you know, I only have one chance at this, and my one chance is this way right now, and I'm going to do it. And then, you know, obviously when the results started coming, and then obviously in May when I'm getting incredible medical results back too, and the real empirical evidence is starting to show itself, it made a difference. It solidified things. I'm not saying it wasn't hard. It was definitely hard.
Well, let's talk about how hard it was, right? So your first day, you're probably still, you know, addicted, however we want to understand that word, to the experiences and the tastes and the chemical rushes that you get. What were the first few days like, and how did you deal with the hard?
I think the first days weren't as hard as maybe the first 2 months. I think that the first few days you kind of put your head down and you kind of push through, and then all of a sudden you start getting these creeping things in, like, well, maybe a little oil would be okay here, and then people start talking in your ear and stuff like that. And then what really helped me was I got gout about mm-hmm. 2 weeks into the process, and I couldn't walk.
Wait, so like early January, 2 weeks after committing to this, you get an incredibly painful condition. Had you had it
first time ever? First time ever.
So how do you not say, well, clearly this doesn't work? How do you maintain your confidence?
You know, in the background, there's also my conversation with God going on. I mean, you know, I felt very, I'm a man of faith. I felt that I was being shown some things that I think were miraculous things. I think that I was being shook, if you will, and saying, here are tools. Look, Ken, here are tools. You know, these are things that are good for you, that have been created, that are good for you, and just stay the course. And that's what I got from it. Stay the course. And I did. I stayed the course. And then it was like another thing hit me. So I go, then 2 weeks after that, I have to go to the hospital for all the tests. Once they calmed me down and they got me kind of stable, they want to do all these tests. And I go in and I realize that not only did I have an enlarged heart, my left ascending artery was 90% blocked. And so it was yet another injection of reality that I was literally within 30 days of a heart attack. I mean, easily within that amount of time. And at that point, my cardiologist was already talking to me about having to put in a pacemaker because I had all these weird electrical things going on with my heart too. And then, my resolve is in, okay, well, I'm going to keep pushing forward. And then February 9th, so that was about 6 weeks after the emergency room, out of nowhere, I get an email from Ann Esselstyn, Dr. Esselstyn's wife, and says, Dr. Esselstyn would like to talk with you. And so here's the doctor that I'd read his book 6 weeks earlier, and so I'm getting an email, and I pick up the phone, and I call him. And he gives me yet another amazing pep talk about why I keep pushing this course.
How did he know to get in touch with you?
His son, Rip, through business connections that we had. And because Rip's very good friend that he did triathlons with and was also a rower, John Cullicutt, worked with S&T. And so It's just, you can't explain all of the coincidences. They don't add up. But from my personal walk, I can tell you, I was getting a loud and clear message that this is what you need to do. And I was also understanding very clearly that the things that I was doing now habitually were affecting my body dramatically. I mean, they were changing my body. So through this whole time between February and May, I'm going through cardiac physical therapy. And so I'm getting this reinforcement because I'm going 3 days a week and I'm getting a doctor who's hooking me up to all these machines, you know, all the electrical machines, having me exercise, saying, I can't explain. Wow, you're doing really well. By the end, he's writing a letter to my cardiologist saying, this guy is exercising like a strong 50-year-old. Hmm. You know, May comes and I get a cardiologist telling me that my heart is shrunk by 50%, the abnormality, that my ejection fraction's gone up, and that, you know, he can't explain medically how I'm exercising at the level I'm exercising at.
So did you try to explain to them what you were doing? Did they ask?
He asked.
Oh, yeah?
He pulled me down the hall and he said, well, you need to wait for me for 40 minutes, and I thought it was bad news. And he grabbed my arm, and he goes, no, Ken, you don't understand. You have a completely different heart than you had 4 months ago, and I want to talk to you about it. And so he pulls me into his office. He goes, now tell me about this diet you're on. Tell me. I'm like, well, here's how it works. So basically, Dr. Esselstyn told me that I needed to cut out all the stuff, right? Not anything with a face, not anything that came from something that had a face. And he wants me to eat 9 to 10 cups of green leafy vegetables a day, which I have been doing. And he told me that if my cholesterol got low enough, that if I kept eating these green leafy vegetables, that my system would begin to make nitric oxide. And that nitric oxide would actually create a Teflon coating in my cardiovascular system, and would help enlarge all the blood vessels in my system, and would help create pathways that would help my heart work more efficiently. And the cardiologist is going, well, the science is spot on. I mean, he says, would you introduce me to Dr. Esselstyn? Because I think it'd be great for him to come down and talk to the cardiologist in Costa Rica, which haven't worked that out yet, but I'm hoping we will. But he said, you know what, Ken, I don't know how to explain it, but I'll tell you this. I was supposed to put a pacemaker in you today. I had already slotted space in the operating room to do that. He says, but I really don't need to see you for 6 months. Hmm. And that was the end of the meeting. Unbelievable.
So at this, we have these different milestones. You got the gout 2 weeks in, then you find out 2 weeks later that your artery is blocked, and 2 weeks after that you get an email from Anne, and then you have your the May. What was the weight loss like during this time? Because for most people, the weight loss is the thing they can see. They don't need a blood test or a stress test, right? It's not something that the medical system has to go into your black box and extract. So right. at gout 2 weeks in, had you lost weight when you had your test?
How did that look? I lost about 50 pounds, maybe 45 pounds before the visit to the hospital after the ER in that month. And they think that probably maybe 20 of that was water, but then just steadily has gone down. So I've lost, I haven't weighed in the last 3 weeks. I haven't weighed in. But next week I'll weigh in. It'll be a month. But as of the last weigh-in, which was August 16th, which was exactly 8 months from the ER, I'd lost 138 pounds.
So 138 pounds in 8 months.
Yeah.
Get my calculator.
It's like 4 pounds a week. If we
calculate. Yeah, it looks like 17 and a quarter pounds a month.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
So that's more than half a pound a day consistently.
Right. Right. So and the thing about it is I've gone back every single time I weigh. I go back to the very scale in the emergency room in the same hospital in San Jose that's 3.5 hours from me to weigh on that same scale. Because two things, I go there because it's the same scale, but second of all, I go back there and it makes me realize what a miracle it is, how far I've come in the months that I've been going to that scale.
Mm. And you're also representing publicly. Right. You're not just doing it in the privacy of your own bathroom.
No. I'm everything. And I send my doctors a report not every week now, because when I weigh in, I'll send them a report. But that report has all of my exercise for the week. It has all of my nutrition stats for the time of the report. I put everything in my Fitness Pal, which is the Under Armour application. And it tells me how much grams of saturated fat I'm eating, unsaturated fat, all of the different parameters on nutrition, how many minutes and types of exercise, you know, max rates, average heart rates, inclinations, climb, distances, all of that stuff. So I have pretty much a complete digital record of this whole process from the beginning.
So I'm imagining that someone's listening to this and saying, well, goody for Ken, but I don't have that kind of time.
Right.
It sounds a little bit like you've just taken on a second job. Did it feel like that?
I mean, I've literally taken 8.5 hours of my day, of my week, and put it into exercise. But what I tell people, and what, you know, look, I was that guy 9 months ago. I was that guy walking down the street that everybody kind of turned their head going, he's going to keel over any minute. Right. Mm. And I tell whoever's listening this, right, you know, first of all, I love you as a person, right? And I'm not preaching to you because I've been there, right? But in love, I can tell you this, that if you truly believe that you don't have time to take control of this part of your life, then you're telling yourself a lie. You literally are telling yourself a lie, because at the end of the day, other than our faith, we don't have anything else more important than our physical health in this world. And if we don't have our physical health, we can't love the people that we're called to love. We can't do the work we're called to work. We can't do the things that we need to do in life if we don't have our physical health. And if someone is walking up to you and saying, hey, there is a way for you to make a change in your life, then you probably should put everything down and start reevaluating. Well, maybe I should be exercising 8 hours a week, and maybe I should not be eating meat and dairy and oil right now. You know, these are the kinds of things that we have to make decisions on, but we're told by society that we can't do them. And that is a lie.
Well, you mentioned the word hypocrisy earlier, and the way you're framing it for me, it sounds like you kind of went from idolatry to monotheism. Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's a very interesting way to put it. I can tell you that from my vernacular, that's the one thing I wasn't willing to give God was my weight issue. And I did. And I finally gave it to him. And I'm not trying to say, hey, you know, that's great, Ken, whatever, you did that, right? Well, you can believe it or not, but go look at the picture of me on December 16th and look at a picture of me now, and you're going to say something happened. And I'm telling you how it happened for me, right? But what I'm saying at the end of the day, I think what you're saying is quite true. I think that, you know, I'll tell you this. Basically, I feel like there are three big lies, okay? The first one is a public lie. The first one is that the food industry tells us that it's okay to eat these foods, right? And you can look at any of the documentaries that are out there now, What the Health or Forks Over Knives, all of those different ones that tell the story of basically people trying to justify that these foods are good for you. And that is just not true, okay? But the problem with that lie is it becomes an excuse for people to say, well, the science says it's okay. And then you got great people like Esselstyn, Ornish, Hans Diehl, I mean, Gregor, Neil Barnard, all these great people that you can read, Michael Clapper, all these people that are out there doing some great real science on this stuff. And now you got a piece of paper in your hand, a book or whatever it says, science says this stuff is bad for you, okay? It's bad for you. Now you have to make a decision. And the next lie you tell yourself is, well, that science doesn't apply to me. Well, that's a huge lie, because at the end of the day, it does apply to you, but we don't ever get to that place where we want to actually accept it. I did. I got there. I put myself on the stand. I cross-examined myself, said, Ken, you're 430 pounds. You have heart issues. Are you willing to accept that this is the truth? Are you willing to consider it's the truth? And I did. I considered it. But then once you say, okay, the science does apply to me, the most insidious lie, the one that goes to your question, right, about monotheism, right, mm-hmm. is this. You know, the lie that we hear all the time is that there's no way, Ken, there's no way you can change. It's too late. It's too late. It's absolutely too late for you. And, you know, you're never going to be that 190-pound guy in college that used to run 3 miles. That's not going to happen anymore. I'm sorry. You're never going to be that guy. And that's the biggest lie right there. That's the one that has really changed my life, and me realizing that, yes, I can be that. And doing that is a witness to other people of what I believe. It's a witness to my family that I care about them, right? It's a witness to the people around me that that I care about them because I'm willing to make a change. And it certainly is impacting other people's lives because now they can't share in that lie with me. Because if Ken can do it, anyone can do it. Trust me, a redneck Southern boy from Atlanta, Georgia, who thought fried chicken was the best thing since sliced bread, to go from that and 430 pounds to today, 290 pounds in less than 8 months, right? And feel good and know that I can do it, then anyone can do it, Howard. Anyone can do it.
I hear that so often from people who have shared your trajectory, from Josh Lajani, Tim Kaufman, yeah, Adam Sudd, and yet people don't believe you.
Right. That's what you're saying the polytheism is. There's so many things out there to believe. How could it be so simple? How could it be that simple? Right? You know, the hardest things in life are usually the most simple things, right? Patience, right? You know, patience is such a simple concept, you know, but it is the hardest thing to do, right? It's so easy to understand patience, but to actually practice patience, wow, that's a hard one, right? You know, listening, it's so easy to hear, you know, you should listen more than you talk, right? I still haven't gotten this one because I'm a talker. But to actually practice listening and do it well, wow, that is a hard thing to do. And then someone says to you, just don't eat meat, dairy, eggs, anything that had a face or anything that came from it had a face, and your health will be better. And you're like, well, you know, that kind of makes sense to me. Okay. But then to actually do it is hard. And so we're told that we can't do it. We're told that we don't have to do it. We told us that that really doesn't apply to us in our culture, and so we don't do it. But you know, I met Josh Lejeune, and Josh, you know, push it. Those kind of people are awesome to have in your life because he's pushing me even harder. He's saying, "King, you should run a 5K by the end of the year," and I'm like, "I'm in, Josh." So I go tell my doctors I'm going to run a 5K by the end of the year. They're like, dude, you need to slow down a little bit. You know, you're so clinically ahead of us now. Can we just have at least one more checkup with you before we release you to go run a 5K? I mean, that's where we are. I mean, once the light switch turns on, Howard, once people out there hear that there is hope, then they need to go find those people that are willing to tell them that there's hope and speak that into their lives. That's what they need. And that's why podcasts and information like this are so important, you know. They need to find people that will speak into their lives and tell them that, yes, it is possible for you to be that person again.
Right. And I really appreciate what you're saying about the hardest things are the simplest and those examples that you gave. I think that leads to this self-doubt that all of a sudden, well, because Ken Lander did it, Ken Lander's different than me. And he's always been different than me. So what do you say to people? We're like, yeah, you did it. You're more disciplined. You have faith. I don't. You know, I would love to do what you did, but I look at my history. I look at my past. I look at the 40 diets that I was on and failed. Mm-hmm. And clearly we're two completely different organisms.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think it boils down to one thing. And I know it's going to sound really, really simple. It's going to sound really simple, right? But most of it, but I'll tell you, I feel it now, right? That, you know, my physical outer appearance had a lot to do with the fact that I wasn't willing to love myself in the way that I know I can be loved. And there are a lot of people out there that are hurting, right, and feel like they're past the point of no return and that they can't get where they want to be, right? And the difference is that they don't feel they're worthy to be there. And this really boils down to a very fundamental issue. Those people need to know, number one, foremost, that they're loved, okay? God loves them. People around them love them. And if they're not around people that love them, then they need to seek out those people that will love them, And love is not this touchy-feely thing. Love is this, you can do it. This is the new you. We love you enough to tell you the hard stuff, and we'll love you enough to be alongside you as you're going through the hard stuff, right? And that is what they need to look for. That is the quantifying difference. You know, the fact that I have a wife that was willing to flip a switch for me that day and say, I'm going to cook for you in a way that you want to be cooked for. Not that I don't, and not that I'm some kind of, you know, misogynistic guy that wants to make his wife cook. But the point is that there were people around me. I was blessed with people around me. I said, Ken, if you want to do this, do it. And then I met the Esselstyns, and I met people like Josh Lejeune. I met people like, you know, Adam Sood, people at these conferences, and I went, and I'm like, there are a lot of people like me. There are a lot of people out there that were hurting, that didn't feel like they could change, that can change. And there are a lot of people out there like me now, Ken, that want to love on other people that are going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so, that's what I think. That's what I think the difference is.
So what happened first? You didn't wake up, read the Esselstyn's book, and at 11 o'clock, all of a sudden, love yourself that fully, right?
No.
Like, so what was, like, because I hear people hear that, and like, it's sort of common to say, you know, you've got to love yourself, but, you know, there have been times in my life where I'm just like, I am a shitty person. I am,
right.
I've done terrible things. I'm shallow, I'm mean. When I am a good person, it's mostly because I'm faking it. Like, me loving myself would be like, you know, some affirmation like, I'm a billionaire. It just felt wrong. So how do you get to, what are the steps to get the predictable steps in your experience to get to self-love when you don't have it?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I can only speak for me and completely the first person and someone that I know. I am not, you know, I am not an expert in these areas, and I don't think anyone really is. I think the only way you can be is to actually know yourself, right?
Beautiful.
And I can tell you this, that I had to get to a place where I was completely reliant on God and my faith for every breath. That's where I got to be. I mean, I'm literally sitting there wondering whether I'm going to live for another month. That's where I'm at. Psychologically, that's where I'm at. And so I became grateful for every single breath and every step that was going in the right direction. I became grateful for that. I didn't get down on myself. I had to forgive myself, and I had to be appreciative and thankful for what I was feeling in that moment, you know, and I did. I even when it got to the place where I had gout and I couldn't walk for 2 weeks, it actually was, I was thankful for the fact that I was required to actually stop for 2 weeks and focus on what was important, the main thing in my life. And you know, I think what your question was really interesting. Your first question was, hey, you know, how is it that people say, well, I just don't have time for that? Well, you know what? I was forced to have time for it. And I know that it's a gift, right? I know that it's a gift now. So I can go back to people and I can pour into their lives and say, look, you know what? You know, it's not going to be easy, but there is something greater than you that loves you. And that's what got me through it. That's what got me to where I am today. And you know, people, you can characterize it however you want to initially in your walk. It can be faith. It can be God. It can be something you don't understand yet that you certainly is feeding you and helping you. But wherever you start, you need to know that there's something bigger than you that loves you, and that your self-worth doesn't have to come from what the world tells you it has to be. It doesn't have to be that, you know? And I think that's where I ultimately found myself. I found myself in a place, a crucible point in my life, when I had to make a decision whether I was going to be thankful for where I was and realize that someone loved me and move forward from that place or not. And that's what happened for me.
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, and I'd love to see if I can sort of translate it for people for whom the idea of religious faith or God is something they're not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that for me, what I heard was that the operational turning point was gratitude.
Yes.
And so you don't need to believe in God to be grateful, right? I mean, you can just say, like, let's just be a scientist about this and say, I'm on a planet with the perfect amount of oxygen, the perfect temperature, the perfect distance from the sun. I watched an eclipse 3 weeks ago, and the sun and the moon, which are vastly different sizes, were exactly the same size. And yep. The gravity is just perfect. And like, wow, what? I kind of won some sort of jackpot. And I have, you know, arms and legs and like whatever you don't have, it's far outweighed by what you do. And just moving into that kind of gratitude puts everything in a different sort of context. And I love that you described the things that, you know, someone else would look at you and say, well, those were the low points of your life. And those are the things it sounds like you're most grateful for.
I am eternally grateful for the coincidences, however you want to define them, of ending up in an ER and within 24 hours finding a book that introduces me to the plant-based world in a way that I've never seen it before. And then ultimately, the author of that book reaching out to me 6 weeks later, right? In the meantime, I find out that I've got all of these medical issues, but I am finding that the things that I am doing, right, were actually designed, however you want to say it, like you said, like, you know, we're the perfect distance from the sun. We have the perfect foods we need to eat. We need all these different things. However you want to wrap that up in a bow, I happen to wrap it up in the bow that they were created for me to eat in that way, and I'm eating them, and they're actually changing me, right? Okay? So I'm not just some puppet, right? I'm actually have a free will to either eat these things or not eat them. I'm eating them, right? And they're literally changing my physical body, right? You know, that is the one day of feeling a little bit better than the next. We should all be grateful for that. You know, one or two less beats of your heart for doing the same amount of exercise in a day, showing that your heart's working a little bit better than the day before. We should be grateful for that. We should be grateful in that increase in blessing that we received that day from that particular thing that happens to us. And then we should be grateful. We should take time to stop and say, wow, look at all the things that I have to be grateful for that got me to where I am right now. You know, and we don't do that. We just don't do that. Our society is not driven to make us be grateful. It is driven to make us complain about things we don't have. And that is a bad place to be.
Well, yeah. And to me, that's when I see people who call themselves religious and that's their MO. To me, it's like if you believe in a beneficent universe, whether that's, you know, and people who believe in God, typically like this is all created for me. So if you believe the universe wants you to be happy and you then whatever you get, you don't look happy about. Like the universe, to my mind, would go, oh, well, you know, Ken doesn't appreciate this, so I'll stop giving it to him.
But you know, the interesting thing is I find that every time that I'm ungrateful and then I make that turn, right, and I come back around and I go, you know what? I was wrong there. I should have been grateful in that point. Thank you for that. You know what? The blessings come again. They come again, and they come again, and they come again, and they come again. But I think what the world tries to tell us is that, you know, you're inherently going to go in the wrong direction, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I would say that is an absolute lie, right? That if I'm grateful for where I am right now and I look forward to another day and I look forward to blessings coming the next day because I am really, really, really trying to be grateful for what I have right now, that feeds on itself and creates the right circle, right? But everything in the world tells us we shouldn't. I mean, you know, and think about it. Well, I don't even watch TV anymore because you watch TV and I don't have that car and I don't have this and I don't have that and I don't have that body and I'm never going to have that. I'm not going to have that. Look at that. I'm not going to have, you know. But we never sit and take time to just sit down and write down all the things that we're grateful for. I mean, you know, the fact that my dog walks up right now and tugs on my arm and says, "Hey, I love you because you're here." And, you know, we should be grateful for that. I mean, the fact that we're actually having this conversation right now, we have the ability to actually hear what we're talking about. Some people don't even have that, right? We should be grateful for that, but we're not. And so, you know, we kind of got a little bit more in the metaphysical, but I think that there's a lot to this. I think that there is a lot to how we see ourselves and whether we can actually make these changes.
One of the reasons I love where you went with this with gratitude is that to me that's very easy to operationalize in. You know, if I tell you, okay, the trick is believe in God, there's a lot of people who don't know what to do with that. If I tell you the trick is love yourself, there's a lot of people who don't know what to do with that. But if I say the trick is find three things today that you're grateful for, I don't think anyone's so far gone that they can't start there. And that's like maybe like, you know, that's your ABC on the road to full literacy.
You know what's really cool too, Howard? If you think about it, you could sit down and roadmap your life. Say you're 50 years old and go back each decade and try to remember five things you were grateful for in that decade. You'll realize that those things were there and you start realizing how they all connect to get you to this one point where you are right now, where you're going, wow, a lot of really incredible things have happened in my life. And then the real question becomes, you know, why did those things happen? Could it be because it's bringing me to a place where I need to be more grateful now so I can move forward with my life? I mean, there's just so many ways to look at it, but I think you're right. It's easy to sit down and be thankful for three things right now. I mean, you know, I travel through all Latin America and a lot of places in the third world, and I see a lot of, I live in a place where the average income of a person is probably $300-$400 a month. But you know what? These people are still grateful for what they have. They live on less than, you know, you and I would think about maybe having a nice meal somewhere, and they're still grateful. So wherever we are in life, we can be grateful for what we have.
Right. It reminds me of a concept that I first heard from Joseph Campbell, the mythologist. It was a Latin phrase called amor fati, which means love of one's fate. And there were times in my life where I just felt very, very dark. And that phrase was sort of a mantra for me that, okay, you know, whatever this thing is that just happened to me, how can I love it? Well, how is it helping me grow? And it's a really hard thing. And there have been plenty of times where I would think the words and then resent having to go there. Like, no, I don't want to. But, you know, at a certain point you get beat down enough, you know, you're on your knees far enough that there's no other option, either to give up or embrace.
Yeah. And, you know, and I, in my vernacular, it's like, you know, when you get to that place, the only place you can do is look up. Mm-hmm. And there is always the opportunity. There is always the hope, right, that you can move forward. There's always that hope. And what I would say at the end of all this is the fact that don't buy into the lie that you can't move from where you are now to the next day. Because you can. You can. And if you're not around people that are telling you that, then you need to be around people that are telling you that, whether that be a church or a synagogue or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You know, whatever community it is, you need to be around people that can show you that there is something greater than you that loves you. And you need to be grateful for that. And I think that's where I got in my life. And you know, it's so funny. It's crazy when you think about it. it's all about eating plants, and I've lost weight as a result of it, and I've gained a lot of my health back, and I keep gaining health back. But, you know, it always comes back to the very – it always comes back to the things that aren't about the plants and all about the health. They're about the things that really motivate us, gratitude, love, you know, being a part of a community, feeling like you have a purpose. All of those things are the things that really change who we are. And the other things are just kind of manifestations of that. And I just happened to find out that eating plants is a great way to begin that process, you know, in a new way.
Right. And the irony is, for so many people, eating plants is the first step to getting to those core values that then allow everything else to manifest. I know a lot of people who eat plants, but who don't change their insides. And after a while, they revert back to wherever they were. It's like a rubber band just returning to its shape.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly. It's like a mirror. We're saying the same thing in a different way, and I think you're exactly right. And the plant, you know, it doesn't matter where it starts. It happened to be that finally I had an epiphany moment when I realized that eating plants was going to be key for me spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And I accepted that, and I moved forward with it, and I've learned a lot of things through it, you know, and I hope that people have that kind of journey as well. I mean, it's, you know, it is eating plants is just the beginning of it. It really boils down to understanding, you know, where you are as a person and where you want to go as a person and why things are happening in your life. I mean, the why is everything. And so I think these conversations are very, very important. It just happens to be that plants are such a dramatic way of showing physically how transformative you can be with your own body. I mean, just by doing something so simple as not eating meat and dairy and eggs anymore. I mean, it's amazing. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk to you about your previous career as a lawyer, and I kind of feel like I don't now. I feel like you showed us how to do it rather than intellectualizing it.
Sure.
At some point, I'd love to have you back on the show as a marketer to help us understand how we can spread the word, because you are incredibly effective at it and you do have a lot of professional experience and understanding. But now I just want to come full circle and find out how you ended up on the stage at Plantstock where I met you.
So Dr. Esselstyn and Rip, once they found out in May, I called Rip. I think I called Rip like a day after, on the way home maybe. After this last physical, and saying, "Hey, look, my cardiologist can't explain why I am the way I am." And he said, "Well, Ken, I'd really love for you to come and speak at Plantstock." And you have to imagine what's going through my mind, right? I'm sitting there going, "I just read this guy's book 5 months ago. And now I'm being invited to speak to a community that I have no idea existed until 5 months ago? Really?" You know, and so what was I going to do? I said yes. I mean, what are you going to do when you're faced with that kind of an invitation, when you're like – and so, you know, it became yet another waypoint for me, because I'm like, you know, what am I going to weigh when I get to Plantstock? You know, I had any idea – that I was going to weigh 138 pounds less than I did when I read the book. And here I am on the stage at the farm of the guy who wrote the book that I read 8 months earlier. And what a compelling story it is. And I was so funny. I was watching all these people. You know, one thing, Howard, was amazing as I was watching the faces of the people as I was communicating with them. And just to see the same desires and fears and joy and stress and all the things that I have been feeling for the last 9 months in the faces of this 700 people around me, you know, and to realize, wow, I may have found a place for myself where I actually can use all of the gifts that God's given me in terms of advocacy and those kinds of things to really tell people that, you know, a really simple thing. I love you. There are people around you that love you, and what you're doing is good for you, and we want to see this for you. And you know what? That message was received, Howard. You were there. I mean, it was truly received by everyone who was speaking on that stage. And so it was a true gift for me personally to actually to be there and to receive that love from people and realize that that's what I want to give back. And so that's kind of why I was there. I know that's why I was there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I feel like I don't want to put muddy footprints on this. It feels like we've reached a really beautiful point. There's so much that I want to ask you about, but I do feel like I want to leave it for another time to get tactical.
Sure.
But just, so when is the 5K that you're?
I don't know. It's a new goal. I just downloaded the app, the C2 5K app. Uh-huh. I'm way past the couch potato now, but once I'm going in for another checkup in October, just because that's what they wanted me to come in and do a checkup. And I've already told my doctors that I want to do this. And so, you know, I'm sure they'll say it's fine. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm already running anyways on the treadmill, so it doesn't really matter.
Great.
And so it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it.
So my last question, when I was prepping for this interview, of course, I'd heard your talk and I'd met you and we had a private chat, but online you have very little presence except for your corporate bio at Thrive Farmers. Is there a plan to change that? Is there there are people who are going to want to hear from you again and again and again. I know there are people who listen to this podcast who are thinking, finally, Howie got somebody on the show who's talking openly about God, about faith. This speaks to me like almost none of the other speakers, none of the other guests have. I want to follow Ken. Is there a way, or is there going to be a way for people to do that?
Maybe so. I mean, in my vernacular, Lord willing, I mean, I feel like there could be that. I feel like that I'm learning still. I feel that I still have a lot to learn. I certainly have found that there are a lot of people out there that have faith or damaged faith or have been treated badly, and a lot of this stuff is expressed in their physical result. And you know, let me put it this way: I'm an open book, and at some point it would be great to have more opportunities to speak. But it's crazy is that I keep getting more opportunities to speak every single, you know, I get people calling me and saying, hey, would you come speak at this? Has nothing to do with my health, right? But they hear about my story and they want to go, we just want to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that in all humility. It's, you know, if someone wants me to come talk or to be a part of their lives and pour into their lives in a group setting, you know, I would certainly want to be available for that, especially if it's going to help people feel better and, you know, spiritually and emotionally feel better as well.
Beautiful. So I want to encourage you to get a website, and whether it's a podcast or a blog or a YouTube channel, so that people can get more of you. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask people to email me or just comment below this interview in the comment section if they would like that, if they would like to hear more from you digitally, because I can see you as someone becoming a huge media presence and not doing it for the reasons that lots of us do, for sort of adulation or money or fame, but out of this burning desire to give back and to be a vessel for the love that has transformed you. So I'm gonna see if I can get a crowd of people to motivate / intimidate you into sharing more.
We'll see how that goes. So I'll tell you this. I can tell you this without a shadow of a doubt. There are people out there right now that are listening to this that don't feel like they're loved and don't feel like they can change. And I can tell you this, that I know you can change, and I know that I love you, and that obviously I have received that message to send that to somebody else. And so, you know, I encourage people out there, don't give up. Whatever you do, don't give up, because there is something much greater than you that loves you. And that's really the bottom line.
Right on. Let's leave it there. Ken Lander, thank you so much for all you do, for your work on behalf of yourself and all of us and the planet. And thanks for taking the time on the podcast today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Howard. It has been a pleasure. It really has been a pleasure.
All right. Be well. If you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast and you'd like to support our mission, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Big Change Program, led by me and Josh Lajani, visit bigchangeprogram.com. And be sure to check out the show notes for today's episode with links at plantyourself.com/233. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 232 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And if you get the podcast, but not the Big Change Bulldog, my weekly-ish newsletter, you can also get that when you sign up at the top right at plantyourself.com. In garden news, the kale is doing great, taking care of itself. Lots of dinosaur kale. We got some bok choy that bolted, so I'm going to be more aggressive in harvesting that. And we're looking at possibly our first frost of the season coming up. So we got to figure out how to protect everything so that we have a nice long winter harvest. In running news, I did it. I finished my second ever 50K, and I did it in about 19 minutes faster than my first one. So definitely moving in the right direction. I was surprised at how slowly I was still running at the end. After over a year and a couple months of training, I still slowed way the heck down for the last really 6-7 miles. My mile 28 was almost a 12-minute pace. I did come in at 4:49.57, came in sixth in the race overall, so I'm definitely making progress, and I'm a lot less sore, thanks to my wife who went out with me and drove me home so I didn't have to drive. A friend of mine said driving yourself home after a ultra marathon is like driving yourself home after a medical procedure. Not a good idea. And I learned that the hard way last year and the easy way this year. So now I'm going to take a few weeks off from hard training, just put on walking miles, hiking, light jogging, do some cross training. And then I'm going to prepare for the Tobacco Road Marathon in Wake County, North Carolina, coming up in March, I believe. And my goal again is to Boston qualify. So 3 hours and 30 minutes. And I'll be using, I believe, the Run Less, Run Faster protocol. It's a book put out by Runner's World. And we'll see if that helps me make it across the finish line in 3 hours, 29 minutes, and 59 seconds or fewer. So thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, Dance of Peace. Check out willridenour.com for more of his beautiful choral music. And of course, thank you to all the Plant Yourself podcast patrons, viz. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Mara, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Barons, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, John Kanoski, David Isaac, The Mysterious, Michelle X, Elspeth Feldman, Katoria Dolmanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julianne Rollins, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkis, Rhymes of Circus, Ellie Cameron, Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Bedham, Gila Lassert, David Donahue, Blair Cyber, Darona Vizov, Gio and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth Ann Funderburg, Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck, the equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Berger, Nicole Rance, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, the inscrutable Harry R., Susan Laverty, the Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corker, and Kelly Machia, Deanne Norton, Bonnie Lynch of Plant Happy Oregon, Sabine Kurtzals, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Copel, Shell Rutledge, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Shannon Hirschman, Kate Rolls, Linda Ayad, and Julie Lang, for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this episode, but not for this week. Look for another one, a very exciting episode coming out with Rob Greenfield of robgreenfield.tv. You will be amazed at his spirit, his spark, his story. And that's all for this coming Friday. Until then, as always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.